Grade 8. Paper 1. Part 1. Listening Comprehension. In sections A, B, and C, you will hear everything once only. Listen carefully and then answer the questions that follow. Mark the correct answer to each question on your colored answer sheet. Section A. Talk. Questions 1 to 5 refer to the talk in this section. At the end of the talk, you will be given 15 seconds to answer each of the following 5 questions. Now listen to the talk.
When we talk about a modern company, we usually have managers, employees, products, research and development, or marketing in mind. However, in reality, a company is not just made up of these elements. There are other things that make a company what it is. This morning, we are going to look at some other aspects of a company. Let's first take a look at the offices. The physical surroundings of most modern companies, especially offices, are becoming more and more similar. Although there are some differences from country to country, one office looks much like another. Office furniture and equipment tends to be similar: desks, chairs, filing cabinets, computers, etc. What is important about offices, you may ask? Well, the atmosphere of the workplace can often influence the effectiveness of a company's employees. Modern offices are more spacious and better lit, heated, ventilated, and air-conditioned than in the past. But of course, this is a feature that varies from firm to firm and may be dependent on the size of the company and its corporate philosophy. In some companies, the employees work in large, open-plan offices without walls between the departments. In others, the staff members work more privately in individual offices. No matter what the office layout is like, modern companies pay special attention to the physical surroundings in order to create an atmosphere conducive to higher working efficiency. Another related point when talking about offices is the work relations with other people at the place of work. They include relationships with fellow employees, workers, or colleagues. A great part of work or job satisfaction, some people say the major portion, comes from getting on with others at work. Work relations will also include those between management and employees. These relations are not always straightforward, particularly as the management's assessment of how you're performing can be crucial to your future career. Now, I'd like to say a bit more about the relations between management and employees. There will also be matters about which employees will want to talk to the management. In small businesses, the boss will probably work alongside his or her workers. Anything that needs to be sorted out will be done face-to-face as soon as a problem arises. There will be no formal meetings or procedures. But the larger the business, the less direct contact there will be between employees and management. Special meetings have to be held and procedures set up to say when, where, how, and in what circumstances the employees can talk to the management. Some companies have specially organized consultative committees for this purpose. In many countries of the world today, particularly in large firms, employees join a trade union and ask the union to represent them to the management. Through the union, all categories of employees can pass on the complaints they have and try to get things changed. The process through which unions negotiate with management on behalf of their members is called collective bargaining. Instead of each employee trying to bargain alone with the company, the employees join together and collectively put forward their views. Occasionally, a firm will refuse to recognize the right of a union to negotiate for its members, and a dispute over union recognition will arise. Where there is disagreement, bargaining or negotiation will take place. A compromise agreement may be reached. Where this is not possible, the sides can go to arbitration and bring in a third party from outside to say what they think should happen. However, sometimes one of the sides decides to take industrial action. The management can lock out the employees and prevent them from coming to work. This used to be quite common, but is rarely used today. The main courses of action open to a trade union are strike, a ban on working overtime, working to rule, that is, when employees work according to the company rule book, go slows, which means that employees may spend more time doing the same job, and picketing, which means that employees stand outside the entrance to the business location, holding up signs to show that they are in conflict with the management. Every country has its own tradition of industrial relations, so it is difficult to generalize. In some businesses, unions are not welcomed by the management. But in others, the unions play an important role both in the everyday working relations of individual companies and also in the social and political life of the country.
Section B, interview. Questions 6 to 10 are based on an interview. At the end of the interview, you will be given 15 seconds to answer each of the following 5 questions. Now listen to the interview. If you're going to create a TV show that deals week after week with things that are unbelievable, you need an actor who can play a believer. You know, a person who tends to believe everything. Tonight, in our show, we have David Duchovny, who has starred in the popular TV series The X-Files. Thanks to his brilliant performance in a TV series, David has become one of the best-known figures in the country. Good evening, David. I'm so glad to have you here.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me on the show.
David, have you often been on radio shows?
Oh, yes, quite often. To be frank, I love to be on the show.
Why?
You know, I want to know what people think about the TV series and about me, my acting, etc.
Okay, David. Let's first talk about the character you played in The X-Files. The character, whose name is Mulder, is supposed to be a believer. He deals with those unbelievable, weird, and often bizarre things and events. He must be, I mean Mulder, someone who really believes in the things he meets in order to keep on probing into those mysteries.
That's true. Remember those words said by Mulder? What is so hard to believe? Whose intensity makes even the most skeptical viewer believe the paranormal and outrageous government conspiracies? With every reason to believe that life in the persistence of it is driving us out of our terrestrial sphere, etc., etc.
Fabulous. I guess, David, your contribution to the hit series is credibility. Now, let's talk about your personal experience. From what I've read, I know that starting from your childhood, you were always a smart boy, went to the best private schools, accepted at most of the Ivy League colleges. Not bad for a lower middle class kid from a broken family on New York's Lower East Side. So imagine one surprise when you, who were on your way to a doctorate at Yale, took a few acting classes and got bitten by the bug.
You bet. My mother was real surprised when I decided to give up all that in order to become an actor.
Sure. But talking about Mulder, the believer in The X-Files, what about you, David? Do you believe at all in real life? The aliens, people from outer space, you know, UFOs, government conspiracies, all the things that the TV series deal with?
Well, government conspiracies, I think, are a little far-fetched because, I mean, it's very hard for me to keep a secret with a friend of mine, and you're going to tell me that an entire government is going to come together and hide the aliens from us? I find that hard to believe. In terms of aliens, I think that the odds are there must be.
But you could believe in aliens?
Oh, yeah.
The character you played in The X-Files, Fox Mulder, is so dark and moody. Are you dark and moody in life?
I think so. I think what they wanted was somebody who could be this haunted, driven person, but not behave in that way, and therefore be haunted and driven, but also appear to be normal and not crazy at the same time. And I think that I can offer that.
What haunts you now? What drives you now?
What drives me is failure and success and all those things, so...
Where are you now? Are you haunted and driven? Failed or successful? Which?
Yeah, both.
All of the above?
I always feel like a failure.
Do you mean now you feel like a failure?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, you know, like, I come back to New York, so it's like everything is different. So I lie in bed and think, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, very different. Maybe I'm doing well. But then I think, you know, there are just so many other things that I want to do, and...
Your father and mother divorced when you were 11. Does that have an effect on your life today that you recognize?
Well, yeah. I think that the only way to think of it is that, you know, people are saying your wound is your gold, you know. Wherever you're hurt, that's where you become stronger. So that's what it's really about.
Okay, it's time for a short break. We'll be back in a minute. David Duchovny and the X-Files. Don't go away. Section C, News Broadcast. Question 11 is based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you will be given 15 seconds to answer the question. Now listen to the news.
The Bush administration is warning that continuing Mideast violence threatens to overwhelm U.S. efforts to revive Israeli-Palestinian peace talks, using the recommendations of the Mitchell Commission to bring the two sides together. Administration officials are openly worried that the violence, and particularly the car bomb attacks aimed at Israeli civilians, could undermine what they see as a positive opening toward renewed peace talks presented by the Mitchell Report. The U.S. appeal came in the wake of the bomb blast Wednesday in the Israeli coastal town of Netanyahu that injured several Israelis. Responsibility for the bombing was claimed by the Palestinian group Islamic Jihad. At the State Department, spokesman Philip Reker said there can be no justification for terrorism and the targeting of civilians. And he urged the Palestinian Authority to do all it can to put an end to such incidents, which he said threatened to overtake the latest peace efforts.
Question 12 is based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you will be given 15 seconds to answer the question. Now listen to the news.
Voters in Peru headed to the polls today to cast their ballots in a runoff presidential election that many hope will mark the end of the nation's political crisis. Opinion polls last week showed the moderate candidate Alejandro Toledo with a narrow lead over a left-leaning former president Alan Garcia. Both candidates have campaigned on similar populist platforms. Meanwhile, pre-election surveys indicate that up to 25% of voters in Peru plan to spoil or leave their ballots blank to show their dissatisfaction with both candidates.
Questions 13 to 15 are based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you will be given 15 seconds to answer each of the questions. Now listen to the news. Canada, for the seventh consecutive year, ranks as the best place to live in the world. But if you are a woman, you are better off in Scandinavia, says the UN Human Development Report 2000, released yesterday. Norway is in second place in overall ranking, followed by the United States, Australia, Iceland, Sweden, Belgium, the Netherlands, Japan, and Britain. Finland is in 11th place, followed by France, Switzerland, Germany, Denmark, Austria, Luxembourg, Ireland, Italy, and New Zealand. At the other end of the scale, the 10 least developed countries that provide the fewest services to their people. From the bottom up are war-devastated Sierra Leone, Niger, Burkina Faso, Ethiopia, Burundi, Guinea-Bissau, Mozambique, Chad, Central African Republic, and Mali. Section D, note-taking and gap-filling. In this section, you will hear a mini-lecture. You will hear the lecture once only. While listening, take notes on the important points. Your notes will not be marked, but you will need them to complete a 15-minute gap-filling task on answer sheet 1 after the mini-lecture. Use the blank sheet for note-taking. Now listen to the mini-lecture.
Good morning, everybody. Today's lecture is about Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs. This seems like a psychological topic. Actually, it is something psychological. Abraham Maslow is a psychologist, and he's especially known for his theory of human needs. Okay, first of all, what is a need? Here, we can simply define it as a personal requirement. Maslow believed that humans are wanting beings who seek to fulfill a variety of needs. According to his theory, these needs can be arranged in an order according to their importance. It is this order that has become known as Maslow's hierarchy of needs. In this hierarchy of needs, at the most basic level, are physiological needs. Fundamentally, humans are just one species of animal. We need to keep ourselves alive. Physiological needs are what we require for survival. These needs include food and water, shelter, and sleep. At this level, for us humans, Maslow also includes the need for clothing. How are these needs usually satisfied? It is mainly through adequate wages. Then, what is the next level of needs? At the next level are safety needs, the things we require for physical and emotional security. Physical security is easy to understand. Everybody needs to keep his body safe from injury, illness, etc. Then, what is emotional security? Well, that's maybe the point in this hierarchy of needs where humans begin to differ from other animals. We are thinking animals. We have worries. What if I lost my job? What if I was struck down by a severe disease? Besides physical security, we need to think we are safe from misfortunes both now and in the foreseeable future. How can these needs be met then? According to Maslow, safety needs may be satisfied through job security, health insurance, pension plans, and safe working conditions. After this stage come the levels of needs that are particular to human beings. The immediately following level are the social needs. Under this category, Maslow puts our requirements for love and affection and a sense of belonging. We need to be loved. We need to belong to a group, not just a family, in which we can share with others a common interest. In Maslow's view, these needs can be satisfied through the work environment and some informal organizations. Certainly, we also need social relationships beyond the workplace, for example, with family and friends. Next, the level of esteem needs. What are esteem needs then? They include both the need of self-esteem and the need of esteem of others. If no better, then is a sense of our own achievements and worth. Respect and recognition we gain from other people, we are no worse in work or our activities in other social groups. Of others, if the resist to satisfy esteem needs include either through our work, promotion to more responsible jobs, various the way and other forms of recognition. personal achievements is the top level of this hierarchy of needs. It's honors and awards for the self-realization needs. In other words, what follows to grow and develop as people, the needs these are capable of being. These are the words, they are the needs by. Whether one can achieve this level to become all that we are, perhaps determines whether one can be a great man, most difficult needs to satisfy man. Of course, it depends on different level or not. The means of satisfying them tend to vary greatly or just an ordinary. For some people, learning a new people, a new career after retirement could quite be with the individual self-realization needs. Skill, starting people, it could be becoming the best there will satisfy their guests. It could be becoming the president of I. While for other, anyway, being great or ordinary is in certain areas, self-realization is largely individual. BM. This suggested that people work to satisfy their physical what others think, whilst then their safety needs, and so on. In general, they are motivated by the needs, logical needs first, remain unsatisfied. However, up the needs ladder level, do not have to be completely satisfied at the lowest level that next higher level come into play. Needs at one person's physiological and safety needs are before needs at the that person will be motivated primarily by if the majority of a, but any physiological and safety needs satisfied, that will keep playing an important role by social needs. Okay, that's the general picture of Maslow's hierarchy that remain unsatisfied. Just to sum up, I've briefly introduced to you. Okay, Maslow thinks there are five kinds of needs. One being more important than the preceding one. Maslow's theory found his ideas interesting, and in our next lecture, Human Needs, with each discuss the practical implications of his theory. I hope that you
now you have 2 minutes to check your notes. A lecture will mainly the 3-minute gap filling task on answer sheet 1. And please complete the 15. 50-